Right, rolling.
Yep. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. Just a quick one. So this weekend, July 11th to July 13th, 2025, the Rural Remix Film Festival is happening in Telford at the Wellington Orbit, Shrewsbury at the Old Market Hall, Ludlow at the Ludlow Assembly Rooms, and Wem at Wem Town Hall.
And if you happen to turn up at Wellington Orbit, you might just find...
We're hosting.
Okay, that's what I was going to... We're hosting the Wellington Orbit. We're going to be showing three films, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and 28 Years Later. We're going to record a live episode while we're there. You can interact. It's going to be crowd participation up the wazoo.
That's non-optional.
We're putting microphones in you. Secret movie screening to cap it all off.
Secret movie screening, bud.
We're so good at adverts.
We're trying. £24 all in.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Well, I think that's it. Should we start the show?
Yeah.
Cool. Enough.
Paganism, poetry and penis, not just a good night for a farmer's daughter, but also a terrible weekend for Jessie Buckley as she does battle with an army of toxically masculine Rory Kinnears. It can only be Alex Garland's 2022 movie, Men.
Men. I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. That's right, we're continuing our Alex Garland series with his 2022 feminist film, Men. And who is more qualified to talk about this other than two men? How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Busy at work. And we're going to start prepping for our live show that we're doing, which I'm super excited about.
I mean, you say start prepping. I've been sweating about it for weeks.
There's stuff there.
All I need to do is go... Is this?
Yeah, yeah. We need to sit down. We need to sit down together. We just need to write a bunch of stuff. I mean, it's fine because we've had stuff on. You've been busy. I've been busy. How are you doing, dude?
I'm actually doing all right, man. So I got answers for my lung finally.
Right.
Finally.
Yeah, you did.
So at some point in my life, I've had TB. Yeah. Didn't know I had TB. Recovered from TB. And then now it's sort of the scar tissue is slowly seeping air every now and then, which is really fun. But other than that, I'm good, man.
Right, shall we sum up the show a little bit?
Let's do it.
I'm going to scroll down. We're going to talk a little bit about the story of Alex Garland.
We're going to talk Rob Hardy. Hardy Boys?
I'll explain who Rob Hardy is. Don't you worry.
I know Hardy Boys. We're going to be talking Panavision. We're going to be talking their collaboration.
Well, collaboration is a theme generally.
Okay.
But speaking of themes, I want to ask, because this film is packed full of them.
It is.
I'm going to ask you what you thought of things like the colour scheme, the swan, the green man. And finally, and ultimately, we're going to ask the most important question. What's it really mean? Now, Ben mentioned it earlier. We are two straight enough white men talking about a film that's very much about the anxieties and realities of women. And so when I wrote this week's plot breakdown, I thought it would be good to cover both bases. I've written what I feel about what happens in this film. And then I've written a completely accurate to how you feel about gender politics. I just feel like there are probably some toxically masculine men that listen to our show that need...
There is none. Are you being serious? There's none.
I feel like there could be a new listener comes along.
Right.
And they're going to see our understanding and our attempt to understand the feminine experience as it's displayed in this film.
Right.
And they're going to be turned off. So it's just a little something for them. There's nothing in there that you're going to struggle to read. Okay?
Right. And I'm going to be the one reading that one.
You're on the yellow. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
mint.
After her husband dies by suicide, Harper rents a remote country house to grieve and heal. In the nearby woods and village, she meets a series of strange men, including a landlord, a naked stalker, a priest, and a policeman, but all of whom they look really eerily alike. Mm. And as she tries to settle in and heal, the men's behavior grows increasingly invasive and hostile as they each either violate boundaries or threaten hostility against her.
Right, okay, yeah, sound. All right.
So you can do it in a Cockney accent if that helps you remove.
If I can put an element, I'll put like a block.
Yeah.
Between me and
what I'm about to make you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sound right. So this is all right. This is for you, Bazza. I don't know why. Fuck off! Is that what happens? I slapped this movie on thinking it was going to be a top fucking geezer cinema. This will closing the fucking name, mate. It's 2 hours of some bird getting mardy because she's got zero fucking bents. Landlord's charming as fuck. Priest gives her free advice. Kid just wants to play a game. And she acts like she's on the blob for all of them. That is fucking outrageous.
I mean, you said it, Ben. So.
Yeah, sure.
But through flashbacks, we learn that Harper's marriage was actually emotionally abusive.
Mm.
And her husband threatened suicide if she left.
Yeah.
And during their final argument, he physically attacked her.
He did.
His death, you know, falling from the balcony, may have been intentional or it may have been accidental. In the present, Harper's fear deepens because the men begin appearing at her home, breaking in and confronting her with escalating violence and threat.
Hang on. She's now having a fucking garden as a threat, covered in leaves, wandering around like a pissed up edge. That's just pagan tradition, mate. It's fucking culture. It's a bit of bants and she's too fucking frigid to do the right thing, which is nosh him off while he has a pint and a sausage roll.
I mean, that's bold, mate.
I violently hate this, Rob.
I feel like everyone...
You set this up as a joke and I am a grade A cunt right now. This is unreal.
But think of it as a purging, healing journey, Ben.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. You get back to eloquently summing up the film and then I'll just offend everyone.
The final
again.
Act descends into surreal body horror as the toxic men give birth to one another in a grotesque cycle of flawed masculinity leading from toxic man to toxic man, mm-hmm. ending finally with the return of her husband. When Harper, exhausted by the endless cycle, resignedly sighs and asks why all this is happening, what is it that this monster wants? He simply, sincerely replies, for you to love me. Quite affecting, really. And a really kind of, I personally found quite a shameful kind of watch because I was really awful. Thinking about, like, you know, men that I've been in my younger years that I aspire not to be now, but it was really painful to see depicted on screen the kind of living reality that 50% of the population go through every day. Just last bit for you there, mate.
Yeah. Again for you, Baz. Oh, get fucked. One bloke giving birth to another bloke out his fucking arsehole for 10 minutes straight. What the fuck is that? Sociology? Psychology? Fucking biology? Bollocks, mate. I came here for a film called Men and left with a Mr. Tumnus pumping out mates like a fleshy Russian doll. Yet another 2 hours of my life wasted listening to a crying woman. I didn't even get laid beforehand. It's bollocks. I feel like you don't know me at all. Not only have I just violently upset 50% of the population, or 50% of the population, not only have I just violated 15% of our listeners. We see the figures. There's so few of you. But also, you've written that going, yeah, Ben will find this a right laugh.
Yeah.
That's kind of upsetting.
No.
Just going to put that out there.
No,
fuck you. I'm on Airbnb right now. I'm booking a country home. I'm going to mourn this.
You've misunderstood. I've written that because I know that it would be incredibly difficult for you to read aloud.
Yeah.
And I find it funny to see that happen.
Good stuff. That's good.
So,
all right.
So,
well, I'm
if
glad
anything,
for that.
Take the content there
and
recognize that I see that is nothing you believe.
Yeah. Okay,
and
good.
The comedy
good.
Is in making you say it.
Okay. Well, when you put it like that, it was very funny.
I wanna start off by telling you why I love men. Why I adore men. Hmm. Why I think men...
Is it because of it? And by it, I mean...
The pain.
Peanuts.
The pain. Penis. No.
Peanuts.
This is the entry in his filmography that finally explained for me why, you and I have said before, Alex Garland is the bridge that completely knits our film taste together.
Yeah.
Like, we adore him, and I'm like, why is that, though? Why is that? And it kind of relates to something that he's been doing his entire career, but really doubles down on in this one, so it becomes quite apparent.
Yeah.
We've said before he's like a writer at heart, right? So he wrote The Beach about his gap year.
Yeah.
He wrote 28 Days Later with Danny Boyle. And so following his uncredited directing work on Dread, he started directing more. Now, why do you think Alex Garland gets directing? What do you think drives him to no longer be a writer but be a director?
I think it's got to be quite difficult being a writer because you get given so much space to let your imagination run wild, to really paint the picture and set the scene, right?
Okay.
And if you were to try and condense that down into a two-hour visual,
yeah,
it's going to be fucking nigh on impossible.
Mm.
Now, if you're writing stuff as complex as Alex Garland is, there is so few people that I would ever be able to trust to go, here's 300 pages mm-hmm. of intense mm-hmm. character development, ridiculously deep themes that need explaining correctly, because if it's portrayed the wrong way, it will come across the wrong way.
Yeah.
And also, Jimmy Savile gang. You know what I mean? So
you've hit the nail on the head. Alex Garland himself says, it wasn't that I had any great urge to direct. It was more born out of anxiety based on writing. I'd find it very agitating if something in the film felt totally wrong to me or something that I felt was important was absent.
Amazing.
I'm not temperamentally suited to being a film director.
Right.
So he is exactly doing that. He's just going, well, I've written this story.
Yeah.
It's a fragile little sculpture made out of snowflakes that all kind of lean on one another.
Yeah.
And if you miss a part of it, it doesn't work. And
no, of course.
Like, there are so many ways that this film could have become like a misandrist, all men are evil.
Yeah.
And come across as like a shallow bullying.
I love that, though. That makes me... See, this is why I can trust Alex Garland. Because mm-hmm. I feel like some directors will get given a script and get given a story and they work on it for 5 years and it becomes this sort of work of art, right?
Yeah.
Fleur Fortune,
exactly.
When she got given the Assessor script, turns it into the Assessment, gets rid of all the Minority Report
spends
bullshit,
years. Yeah.
And she makes it a harrowing sci-fi rather than a futuristic fucking everything runs on
liquid electricity
bullshit. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
Which is incredible. Well, but then you've also got the other side of the coin, where someone will take a beloved video game and turn it into a German tax scam. Not mentioning any names there, Uwe Boll.
So Garland does everything you said there except the tax scam bit.
Yeah.
Right? Men was written 15 years before it was filmed. It was an idea he's had for like the longest time.
So this was before the whole Me Too movement thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so parts of the script. So the lens with which it's presented is almost definitely heavily influenced by the Me Too movement.
Right, okay.
But that sense of there being something cosmically unknowable.
Right.
Like the Green Man monster in this, which is kind of represented through all the men.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of the gender dynamic between something like yourself that you know and something unknowable that you can't understand, whether that's a monster or the other gender. Now, when I say he became a director to have complete control of the process, it does sound a little bit like he's a control freak. The opposite is true.
Yeah. He doesn't strike me as a control freak. He does strike me as someone that's passionate about protecting his ideas and making sure that they're conveyed in the
100%,
right way.
But I think one of the things that everyone that works with him has said is that they can have a chat with him.
Yeah.
And he will incorporate those ideas if he thinks they match.
1,000%.
So Jessie Buckley, the lead actress, she wrote some of the lines for The Vicar based on like what she would find most offensive and what she would find.
Wow.
So she was like, well, in my experience, this is the kind of angle and of attack. And that was incorporated. Rob Hardy, the cinematographer, who I'm going to tell you about later, talks very much about there being a huge amount of prep time.
Right.
A huge amount of testing and it being a collaborative process where if you're on a set with Garland, it's because he values your ideas and he's paying for you to tell him when he's doing it wrong.
George Lucas, take note. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Where the fuck 1,000%. Is this attitude? Where is this attitude from George?
He, in this film, takes a lot of what he's being given and is listening far more to the feelings than the thoughts. I'll get into what I mean by that, but essentially, you mentioned when we were talking about this earlier, little slow push zooms.
They fuck me up.
Right.
So watching this film the first time through, I didn't know what I was getting in for.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to keep it as spoiler-free as possible.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we did an episode with another podcast a long while ago, and one of the hosts just decided to blurt out something about it, and X, that they broke down in one thing. We managed to turn it into an X-Men joke, which was, you know, quite funny.
That's pretty good.
I was fuming at the time. But yeah, it's fine. But I went into this with like a relatively blank slate and just a sort of moron's opinion about what it meant, right? Which is fine. So watching it, I was like, standard story. It's going to be unsettling. It's going to be a difficult watch for most men because it's exposing us to the experiences that most people will live with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of part of society that this is now an expected thing, which is a disgusting view. So I watched it. It made me very uncomfortable. It made me sort of ashamed of people that I was in the past and sort of versions of myself. And there's a lot of visuals in there that kind of represent growth and the restart of cycles and stuff like this. And it kind of really puts a spotlight on learning to catch these triggers, right? The one thing that I didn't notice at the time was how the cinematography is going to make me feel motion sick in the most delicate possible way. And it really fucking unsettles me.
Yeah.
So watching it for this, obviously since then, being a massive fucking Garland super fan, went back and watched it like 3 or 4 times. And it was on my 3rd or 4th watch through, I messaged you and was literally like, "Bud, there is some slow zooms that are so painfully slow." And it's the one scene that I caught it on first was this gorgeous backdrop of like forget-me-nots at the foot of an English oak tree. Gorgeous, gorgeous backdrop. The slow zoom just fucked me. And then that was it. I was hooked on it. I had to message you and be sort of like, life is death and death is life, buddy.
So you pointed it out and I wanted to have a look into it. So I watched Rob Hardy, who is Alex Garland's cinematographer.
Right.
Up to this point, we've seen multiple films shot by Rob Hardy.
Okay.
Because he shoots almost everything that Alex Garland touches.
Fucking incredible.
He's the guy that shot Ex Machina, he's the guy that shot Annihilation, and he's the guy that shot this. He, you remember like Nolan's got like Hoyt Van Hoytema and people that he goes to every time because he doesn't have to have a discussion with them. That's just a shorthand. And Rob Hardy's probably one of Garland's most committed collaborators, along with, I'd say, Jeff Barrow from Portishead, who always does the soundtracks for every one of his movies. Cool. What Alex Garland says about Rob Hardy is he's a lovely man who never overbakes the cinematography. And I'm like, what does that mean?
Okay.
Like, how do you quantify that? And it was in listening to Rob Hardy talk.
Right.
And he's got exactly what you want in a technical creative. And what I mean by technical creative is a sound engineer who knows mics and what they sound like. Or a cinematographer who knows lenses. He's got this encyclopedic knowledge of his trade and his tools.
Yeah.
But doesn't care about any of it. He's super down to earth. And he's not reverent. He's not built like a dogma and a religious thing around it. He's not got principles. He's just like, what do we need? Right. And I'll sort that out.
Yeah.
And it was a huge test process.
Okay.
So the green that's really prevalent throughout this movie.
Yeah.
He was talking about how I hate shooting green. It's like a really hard color to do.
Yeah.
So he went to Panavision, who, if you don't know this, dear listener, Panavision are like the equipment company in the UK. Yeah. For everything.
Yeah.
And you can just go, here's the shot I want to do. And then they will bring you a trolley with like 18 lenses on.
Yeah.
And you just get to try each one and then rent the ones that you need. And so him and Garland, literally, they found the location and then they just did a shitload of tests.
Amazing.
And he's the guy who brings so much of the kind of technical, all the things that we celebrate Fincher for.
Right.
Rob Hardy gives Alex Garland without Alex Garland having to know all that stuff by himself. Garland writes.
I love that.
Garland knows what he wants the shots to be.
Yeah.
And how he wants them achieved. But he just offloads all that to Rob Hardy, who then goes, here's how we're going to do it. So, for instance, the scene in the pub.
Yeah.
You got 1,000,001 Rory Kinnears.
Right.
Just roaming about,
I think there's 6, but yeah.
1,000,001, right? So it's a tiny room compared to a film set.
Yeah, of course.
How do you think they achieved getting multiple Rorys in the room?
No clue. CG.
No CG, no green screen, because the movie has only got a 6 mil budget and they're shooting it across 6 weeks. And because of the time of year they need it to be in the UK, it needs to be right at the start of spring so that it's got the right light tone, the right nature. The woods are looking out.
Sure,
they're supposed
to
do. So they've got this really tight shooting schedule.
So would it have been like they film Roy Kinnear's each individual part side by side and then it's all overlay?
They do, but in order to dub him in order to overlay him,
right.
You can't move the camera at all. It has to stay exactly where it is. So what you have to do is you have to do this bizarre jigsaw where you look at the shots that you need. You have to plan every single angle that you want first.
Right.
And then you set your camera up and you film Rory being one character.
Right.
And then everyone takes a step back from the camera while Rory fucks off and goes get changed.
Right.
Does the makeup different, does everything different.
Yeah.
And then walks back into that shot.
Right.
And then re-performs the scene, but as the other character.
Fucking hell,
before
man.
You can then move the camera, because if you will never get that shot exactly as it was again. But then you've also got to make sure that when you move to the next shot, all your characters are where they were in the other shot, so no one's teleporting across the room.
Ooh.
So you just got to tape mark the entire floor and hope you get it. Because if you fuck one of the later ones up and you don't get it, you've got to start from shot one.
That's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
That right there, I get the little anxiety flutter in my chest. Imagine writing it.
Right.
And going, this is how I need it to work.
Right.
I love you. You've been my best mate for about 18 years, 19 years. There is not a fiber in my body that would ever doubt or question your integrity at all, right? I wouldn't trust you with that.
I wouldn't trust me with that.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. And the thing is that so often in making this film, a lot of the birthing scenes at the end, there was a lot more practical effects.
A lot of it looks prosthetic.
Yeah.
With bits of CGI mixed in.
Right. So there's a fair bit of CGI in the end, and it's because they've got this insane shooting schedule. Because of the season, they've only got about 6 hours of usable time.
Yeah.
Depending
on shooting
at
night.
Because they're shooting at night.
Yeah.
And during the birth sequence, it's supposed to be the hour before sunrise. So that when the husband walks back in at the end,
it's light.
It can be light, but it's the same quality of light that it is in the flashbacks.
Yeah.
He has to arrive at the same point in the day that he kills himself a few years earlier in the narrative.
Right.
So the light has to be that orange yellow, because you have to reflect his character, right?
Yeah.
So they've got this fucking practical pregnant Rory Kinnear latex mangina thing on the floor. But then because it's such a tight schedule and because it's just miscommunication, the practical effects team haven't made the hole that the vagina that Rory's supposed to stretch out of big enough.
Right.
So it's like you could get a bit of face.
Got you.
And then like that's it. But also the hole that Rory's supposed to be crouched in under the floor in the garden to come up out of this isn't big enough either. And they're like, we can't extend the shoot.
No.
We have 1 hour until sunrise.
Yeah.
And this doesn't work.
Right.
And then they bust the water main trying to dig the hole deeper.
Amazing. Amazing.
So now they're on set. They got no water.
Right.
They got no time.
Yeah.
And they don't have the shot. And it's little moments like that that, I mean, that's not even on IMDb.
Right.
I've gone deep in the research here.
Yeah.
And what's fascinating to me is that Alex Garland gets this grand idea and then he turns around to his team of collaborators and like, let's go. But his collaborators all get the vibe. They know what they're doing and they trust his idea. There's not a moment where Rob Hardy is doubting Alex Garland's vision. He just gets it. He understands it. And he also feels sorry for the studio the entire time, because he's like, they don't know what they're getting here.
No. But
to the degree where when Alex Garland sent over the script,
yeah,
he hadn't quite finished it yet. So he was like, oh, the men just transform into one another.
Right.
They greenlit the script. He then later had the birthing idea.
Amazing.
And realized he hadn't told anyone at A24 that that's what he was doing until they saw saw the film.
I saw something about this where the original idea was mutations, where they would mutate into each other. And he was like, shit, it's been done before.
Mm-hmm.
Which it has.
Yeah.
And it's been done well before. So if this didn't live up to that,
you're stuck.
On a $6 million budget as well, that's fuck all.
Do you know where he got the idea? Attack on Titan. Alex Garland's daughter got him into Attack on Titan. He's a massive Attack on Titan fan.
He's such a fucking nerd.
He's
such a lad.
He is. And he was like, I just loved how weird it was and how horrifying it was because of how weird it was. It was so ridiculous that it becomes uncanny.
Yeah.
And that's what I changed the ending to, forgetting to tell A24 that's what I was doing.
As if they would have minded, though. Do you know what I mean? Right. They would have been sort of like, if anything, he'd have been like, yeah, so anyway, it's men giving birth. They'd have been like, fucking yeah, here's an extra mil.
But the only other interesting nugget from the Rob Hardy interview that I want to bring up is the colour scheme.
Okay.
What did you think of the colours? What did you see of the colours? What is the colour scheme? What does it mean?
There's parts of the film that, again, I've done no research into this because I was asked not to.
Yeah, no, this is just as a viewer.
So as a viewer, bear in mind, I watch films differently to most people watching films because I'm watching it with the sole intent of... What does it really mean?
Yeah.
I want to talk about it on a podcast. I can't just sit there and be like, yeah, it's dead good, mate. Yeah.
yeah.
You know
totally.
What I mean? So, do you remember last week I was asking you if you had a copy of the King James Bible?
Yeah, you were.
But I wanted the red letter version.
You did.
Okay. So the King James Bible, I got a lot of Christianity stuff from this. Obviously, you know, like the
mm-hmm.
woman eating the apple from the tree. No, mustn't do that. Forbidden
right,
fruit.
Yep.
There's a lot of like Christ-like references when it comes to James,
yep.
who is her husband,
yep.
who has killed himself or slipped from a balcony. We're not sure which is which. Either 100%. Way, he's dead. But when he is in the flashbacks
mm-hmm.
and we're seeing the arguments and stuff unfold, or when he's involved in a scene or when he's spoken about in a scene,
okay.
there is red. There's either a red wall, the curtains are casting a red light, a red glow into the room.
Mm-hmm.
It's always red. His name is James Red. He was found dead in the Christ-like position with the wounds to the wrist, the damage to the skull, the broken leg.
Mm-hmm.
It's all kind of like
Christ-like.
It's
wounds,
all Christ-like.
Right?
So obviously, like King James Bible, red letter.
Yeah.
This is what I was getting from it, and
it's
I thought
there.
I was like cracking the code. The math fucking signals
yeah.
were like, you know,
floating
they were
in the air.
Going past my face. What does it all ultimately mean? Fuck knows, mate.
I can tell you.
That'd be great.
I can tell you because there's
the
a couple
bit.
Of other bits in
there is.
There, right? The colour scheme is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
The inside of the house is red.
It
the
is.
The outside is green.
It is.
All of the flashbacks are in amber.
Yeah.
Not traffic lights, don't worry.
No.
The swan. At one point, she asks the monster, what are you? And he says...
This is when the priest is in the bathroom. She's
yeah.
like, what the fuck are you?
Yeah. And he goes, a swan.
Yeah.
Just an odd thing.
This is, again, watching it 3 or 4 times, I'm certain that this is a reference to something.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't research anything about it because I'd rather find out about it from you.
There's also the Green Man.
The Green Man I know a bit about.
Right, tell the listeners about the Green Man.
So he's like an old pagan symbol for like death and rebirth of like cyclical nature. Essentially.
Yeah, so it's a symbol that's so old we've forgotten what it means.
Exactly.
In the UK.
There is so much shit behind it though.
Right.
And there's so many different like religions and folklores that sort of borrow
reference
the Green
it.
Man
yep.
as sort of like a character in their story and to like move stuff along or whatever. But yeah, I think the death and rebirth of
so that's what it's
nature,
used for in this film.
Yeah.
In actuality, no one really knows. It's
no.
so old that we've
yes.
forgotten what it means because the islands we find ourselves on in the UK, they go back pre-Christian, they go to pagan, and they mm-hmm. go before that. So there are systems of belief that we've just forgotten, but it leads to a kind of shared folklore of and a sense of history of places
yeah, yeah,
that's unknowable and we've forgotten it, and there's something kind of scary in that.
It's terrifying,
right?
The fact that everyone knows something,
yeah.
but not knows why.
Or
not
what
knows
it is.
Why?
And doesn't know why.
That's words.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This
everyone
is
everyone knows something
this
they don't
is sentence.
Know. So the Green Man, weirdly, is a bit of an odd one because he's not actually that old. Like
okay.
the wisdom, the kind of shared knowledge of him
right.
comes from one researcher in the 70s who did a lot of work on what it meant.
Right.
And the belief is the kind of widely held, oh, is it an old pagan god that we've forgotten, which was very much
right.
the prevailing theory.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't actually that well founded in later research. It turns out the Green Man might just be a kind of self-occurring, interesting bit of decoration that people did when they were doing churches, when they were writing Bibles,
yeah.
when they were doing this or the other. It goes back to Turkey. There's lots of places that the image crops up.
Big in Germany as well.
Right, but yeah. they're not connected by any history whatsoever. So it seems to just be an image that we like to make.
See, that's a very lovely way of looking at it. But now that you've just said this and pointed it out and there's no connection to anyone and all this shit, it makes me think of like all those nutters on the internet, which I love reading their
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
They're great. The guys that are like, pyramids in Mexico and Egypt and they
that
didn't
must
talk
be linked,
to each other.
Right.
That's aliens.
No, it's just if you try and stack things, a pyramid is a really fucking efficient way of doing it, right?
It is, but it's not it's not the most efficient way to sacrifice a human.
No, true. Very true.
You know what I mean?
So when you've got scribes before the printing press and you've
yeah.
got a bit of paper, you're copying out the Bible,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
copying out whatever, you've got to do it by hand.
Yeah, 100%.
This becomes a really important bit of paper.
Yeah.
And so you want to decorate it. And that's
yeah,
where you get interesting medieval decorations and things like that. Same with church walls.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you just go, well, what are we putting on here?
The church thing and the cathedral things are a little different because I think that does sort of bode more to sort of the fertility reference of the Green Man.
It's all there. It's
yeah.
all there. And the thing is that this isn't a formalized mythology like Zeus.
Yeah, of
this
course.
This is a folk mythology of loose...
It's all folklore.
Loose shavings just put yeah. together, right? If you want to do mythology, that's where the swan comes in, because there is an old myth of Zeus coming down and raping a woman called Leda. And W.B. Yeats wrote a poem about it called Leda and the Swan, and it's Zeus turns himself into a swan and consummates with a woman.
Right.
Yeah. Again, Greek mythology. Zeus was always turning himself into animals and fucking mortals. That was his thing.
Okay.
Don't kink shame, bro.
Listen, bestiality is a thing. I don't understand it, but it's a thing. But apparently, the ancient Greeks were big on it.
Massive on it. One of the paintings of this scene from mythology sold for over 50 million.
That's just a tax write-off, though. That's just rich people with too much money. That's pure tax write-off.
It's a hugely, like, in classics, it's a well-represented in fine art, in sculpture, in all sorts of stuff.
No one with 50 mil to spend is going, fucking a swan, though.
Well, no, it's art collection, isn't it? It's all speculative. If this will be worth 10 million more 20 years from now, so I'll buy it now.
And a tax write-off.
Yeah.
I need to pay tax on this. Yeah, there you go.
Enjoy. It's like NFTs before the internet.
It's classical NFTs. Yeah. That's all it is.
Right.
All right, yeah, fine.
So that's all in the pot.
Yeah.
So you got the green, the red, the swan. The swan is because he's basically telling her, I'm a god. I am some form of old god who's come down and my purpose is to fuck you.
Right, okay.
That's kind of shorthand for that, right?
Okay.
That's how we know it's not her hallucinating, or this isn't some delusion that she's cooked up. This is a malevolent force that has decided it needs her in order to recreate, to start that cycle of new beginning.
Right.
That maybe she has to die. That's not necessarily answered.
Okay.
It's all there.
Okay.
What's interesting is what Alex Garland has to say. He describes the film as rooted in primal fears and misconceptions that have animated gender relationships all the way back to the story of Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
So he's using the iconography of the Green Man. He talks about them as being bits of imagery that are used again and again and again. But he likes them specifically. He says they're interesting because they're powerful bits of iconography and they provoke a response in one form or another.
Right.
So he's using them because they're powerful symbols, not necessarily because there is meaning there. I'll get back to it.
Yeah.
The Adam and Eve stuff, all totally intentional.
Mm-hmm.
The Leda and the Swan, totally intentional.
Yeah.
The toxic masculinity in Me Too thing is the next ingredient. And Jessie Buckley says, the actress, she says, toxic masculinity in Me Too, of course they're in there. But for me, the film is more about the relationship that we have between each other as man and woman and asking why these kind of things recur again and again and again throughout time.
Yeah.
So it's pulling in the Christian misogynist creation myth of it was the woman's fault.
Yeah.
It's pulling in the slightly sort of sinister, this is the Green Man and he's going to renew and rebirth.
Right.
Even though he's a bloke. So like, how is that possible? Or, you know, he's not the traditional procreative gender.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Greek Leda and the Swan. It's this godlike creature is going to come down and take you by force.
Okay.
So it's a scattering of throughout time of interesting historical mythology and bits of iconography that are all about the man overpowers the woman and she has no say.
Yes. Which is kind of fucky. But also one of the reasons that I wanted the Bible.
Right.
Because there's a passage in the Bible that you helped me find, which is, I think it's Corinthians.
It is Corinthians, yeah.
Corinthians 33 or something like this. Mm-hmm. And it essentially says, women have no right to speak in a church. They will remain silent. If they need anything to say, they will speak through their husbands.
Yeah.
And there's a scene in this film where after losing her husband, whether it's by suicide or whether it's by accident, because we find out later in the film that James was in the apartment above theirs in London. He forced his way in. He was trying to get onto their balcony from the balcony above. So whether by, you know, mistake or suicide, we find this thing. And after she's lost her husband, she goes to a church in the little village that's casually pointed out. And she fucking screams.
Yeah.
There is a guttural, primal, just, I can't even like describe it properly, but it is like raw emotion being spilled out in such a way, and the fucking soundtrack complements the screen.
It harmonizes. It's
bro,
beautiful.
It's disgusting.
Jeff Barrow from Portishead's that guy. He took the pitch of her scream,
yeah,
and then added strings on top of it that make her scream the root of a chord.
It's
beautiful.
It's beautiful thing. It's disgusting when she's having a fucking breakdown in a church because it's almost playful.
Yeah,
and it makes no. It honestly. Super unsettling.
Mm.
But this is
your screaming is literally music to my ears.
This is exactly what you, dude, that, and it was fucking outrageous. But you had that aspect of it. And again, there's all this other stuff. The scene where she first meets the priest and he's spinning everything back on her and he's like, yeah. Well, you know, I bet
sometimes
you must feel guilty.
Men hit women.
It's That's not illegal.
Just a thing. Yeah.
It's not illegal, but it happens. It's not a nice thing, but it happens.
And then you go off on him, don't give him an opportunity to apologize.
And now he's dead because you didn't let him apologize. And puts it all on her, which is
fucking ridiculous.
Fucking outrageous. Yeah. Absolutely outrageous. That made me feel sick.
Yeah.
Because I was just sort of like, and now whenever someone's just sort of like, I've got a headache, I'm like, but how does that make you feel and what can I do to help you?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Even the smallest things, I'm just sort of like, you navigate this. I'm just here for support, buddy. There's a cross. In the background.
There is, yeah, on its side.
On
tilted.
Its side, tilted off to the side, but it's tilted in a way that if you were to take James's death pose,
mm-hmm.
his final resting place, pop it near the cross.
Perfect mirror.
Perfect mirror.
Yeah.
And that is outrageous for Alex Garland to be able to do that shit just on the fly in the background.
I've got another one for you.
Hit me.
So, when she first meets the Green Man.
Which bit? Because I have something on this.
Okay. So she goes and she sees the tunnel.
The tunnel.
The railway tunnel.
Got you.
Now, tunnels have some Freudian imagery.
They do.
This tunnel particularly has a big stone at the top.
It does.
Right?
It does.
And she goes into her tunnel.
Yep.
And plays about. There's a bit of ooing and there's a bit of aahing.
Yeah.
And that's when the Green Man goes, oh, hello.
Yep.
She then legs it.
Yeah.
And she then sees the alternative, the other tunnel.
Yeah.
Which is sealed up.
Right.
It's all kind of subconsciously saying, if you want to engage
right.
with your own anatomy,
right.
you're going to attract men. The alternative is you seal it all up.
That's fucked. I didn't pick up on that.
It's here you are having fun with your tunnel.
Right.
Lots of oohs and ahs.
Right.
And then here comes the man going, oh, can I join in? And if you go, actually, bro, no, I don't want you to,
into what
you
I've
just
got.
You better board it up.
This feeds into what I've taken a note on this. I'm going to read it word for word because I put a lot of work into it and I don't want to fuck it up. I'm Alex Garland in my own fucking point here, all right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the woods is where she begins to channel nature, right?
Yeah.
So the tunnel in the woods is where she echoes out her chants. They seem to almost summon the Green Man.
Mm-hmm.
So she starts chanting into an empty tunnel and then all of a sudden there's a silhouette that stands up. Her presence in this long tunnel and the yearning to connect to nature births the Green Man. So the tunnel representing the birth canal, which is what you've just fucking fed into. Who was going to be responsible for Harper accepting her nature and facing her truth. Maybe not the truth, but her truth. The stuff that she needs to process and understand for herself. So at first, she runs away from the tunnel. We see her almost inhale a dandelion seed, but she avoids it. And it's again, the slow zoom.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography really fucks with me because first couple times, it's like a...
It's
nature.
Just a particle, yeah.
It's nature. It's part of that. No. So she avoids it. Later in the film, we see the Green Man blow a bunch, like a fistful of dandelion seeds at her, which is like obviously symbolism for the
and
Green
one
Man.
One goes in her mouth.
Spreading her seed.
Yeah.
Spreading his seed, wink, wink. One dandelion seed is inhaled. She doesn't run from this anymore, right? But once the dandelion seed is inhaled, she becomes full Harper, right?
Mm-hmm.
She accepts her new nature.
Yep.
This is who I am now. This is what is happening. She's no longer running and she stands up for herself without any guilt, no sway from the fucking patriarchal influences that have been like fucking around with her. None of the male manipulations of any of the characters that she's met so far.
Nope.
And from death to birth, the Green Man has helped Harper process what she needs to overcome what's been oppressing her so she can stare.
It's terrifying.
It's disgusting.
But it's not necessarily from the monster's perspective.
It is not.
Malicious.
It is not.
It's what she needs to grow.
She needed the dandelion seed. She needed to accept the Green Man, the summoning or the consequences of her actions.
Mm-hmm.
She needed to look at, see,
and
accept,
realize,
and then grow into the new Harper, which she does do. And you see it from like beginning to end, yeah, through various flashbacks. You see the mini breakdowns, mm-hmm, the sort of think you're getting better flashback, back to square one. You are fucked. That's the wrong route to go. You know, mm-hmm, we're still working. We're still trying to figure out which way to go. And it's this, it's that whole thing there. And I know that this film is called Men and it's represented in like a very feminist stuff. But if that isn't the most human thing that everyone on this planet can look at and go.
What I adore about it is it doesn't make the Green Man as a mythological folk monster.
No.
Misogynist.
No.
The men are.
The men are.
And the
are,
men that it becomes are, because she needs to learn how to defeat that.
Yeah.
And so it goes, I am the death and rebirth.
Yeah.
You need to be reborn.
Yeah.
And you will kill me in order to be reborn.
Yeah, 100%.
You have got questions about the death of your husband.
Yeah.
Let's fucking answer them. Mm. Let me do the exact same thing up until the point you go, fuck you. You do deserve to die.
Yes.
And then you'll realize that it wasn't your responsibility and you can go on complete and whole. And so the men in this, the human men, are disgusting.
Yes.
Misogynist threats.
Awful representations of what a human person can be. Yeah.
But the mythological spirit is just doing what she needs.
I feel like, well, she summoned the mythological spirit herself.
She does.
Yep. Which is a good way to look at it. There's a whole story on the Green Man being tied in with Robin Hood and all this stuff, because it comes from a place of necessity rather than wanting. So the Green Man will appear as and when need him. Right?
I'm gonna tell you what it really means, what all of this really means.
Do it.
Okay. And what I love about it, and it answers the question why Garland is, for us both, probably the favorite director of the show. We've spoken about it before on the show, but tarot cards.
Yeah.
They're not magical, or at least this is my belief. They're not magical.
They're not.
But what they are is it's a psychological tool that shows you images that have meaning ascribed to them.
Yeah.
It shuffles them into a random order, and then you draw some in a random order. And so you get the card that represents a father figure, the card that represents debt, and the deck, inverted commas, asks, what do you think about that? And it's a question you would never have thought of in a million years.
No, 100%.
Right? But because there's meaning there, and because it's randomly there, your brain is a pattern-making machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Alex Garland quote, I see that written again and again and again when it comes to the interpretations of his films. The thing is this, as if the writer is capable of having a definitive answer about the nature of something. And I just dispute it. I dispute that the writer knows what they are making. I dispute it in my interactions with people on anything, whether it's a bacon sandwich or a book we both enjoyed or didn't enjoy. Over the years, I've been consciously putting more and more into the hands of the viewer. There's probably another element of it too, if I'm honest, which is making the viewer complicit. This is another reason to pull back, because there's a part of me which is really subversive and aggressive and likes messing with people. At times I felt with men that I had gone so far, it's borderline delinquent.
Kinda?
So all of the mythology, all of the symbolism that we've spoken about is there.
Yeah.
Does Alex Garland have a thesis about what it all means? No. It's not there with a tidy,
exactly,
this is what this represents.
Dude.
What he's doing is he's putting his little tarot deck of symbols together.
I like this.
Throwing them on screen.
Yeah.
And going, what do you think? Because you're right.
Yeah. Dude, this is why I fucking love Garland, because it doesn't matter how you watch his films or when you watch his films, which is an important one for me.
Yeah.
Because I tend to put on films at inappropriate times all the fucking
time. Yeah, and you watch them knackered and then you're like,
I watch them knackered and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
This is torture. I think it's one of the number one reasons that we have different film tastes.
Old kung fu movies is where I turn my brain off and go,
I get it.
Kicking the balls. And then evening, that's where the trauma lives. You know what I mean? That's where trauma comes out. That's where Sergeant Kabuki NYPD lives. That's where Poultrygeist lives.
Yep.
And that's my favorites. Because I'm all sleepy and it gets a bit weird. And I'm like, oh, this is dreamlike.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this is going to set me up for a weird sleep. And it does. And I love that because I can't do drugs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the closest I get to drugs
is a fever dream.
Return to Nukem High Part 2 as I fall asleep into a slumber and accidentally become part of that universe for about 4 hours whilst I sleep. It's mint, right?
Yeah.
But Garland's got this thing. I watched Men when I was awake and I was alert and I was paying attention and I was fucking chomping at the bit for it.
Yeah.
And this is where I get my little
point from where I'm like, oh, I'm like breaking the fifth wall right now. I'm an interdimensional being. And then I watch it as I'm falling asleep because I'm like, I just want something comfortable. I've seen it before. I know what I'm going to get out of it. I'm just going to get into it. And the evening watches, buddy, are the ones that really fuck me up. And I know I said I wouldn't do any research. I've looked into something a little bit, but it is the most, it's the smallest amount that I've looked into this. It's, I was falling asleep and shit was getting weird.
Right.
And it was a little bit too visual. And I was like, is this real? Is it just Harper seeing men as all men are the same? Or is it just that each man is representing a different aspect right. of one person?
Did right? you find the answer that Alex Garland gave?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So what I did read is all I wanted to know is this real?
Yep.
Is this real? Is everything that's happening real? Because there's loads of weird shit
there's
that
loads
happens.
Loads of hallucinatory stuff, yeah.
Like where the phone crackles and it's a screaming yeah. face and then she'll hear stuff in the distance and then mm-hmm. it's never really touched on again. And I'm like, is any of this real? And Alex Garland turned around and said, everything in this film is real.
Yes.
None of it is a hallucination. Nope. None of it is a dream. Everything is real. And I'm like, well, that fucks me up worse. Now,
yeah.
I get what I like from movies, mm-hmm. which is getting fucked up and yeah. left with a weird feeling that's going to sit with me for weeks. And every time I watch this, I feel like those weeks are getting longer because I notice new shit and I've watched it like 9 times now.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And then Alex Garland, for you, every time we watch this, it's going to be a different theme that's being explored.
Exactly
we're going
that.
To notice tiny little details. And we get different things from it,
yeah.
from the same source material, but it feeds both of our souls in equal
so
measure.
This is why I say it becomes really clear how he's our favorite director. Because
yeah.
with Your Sobriety Journey, my mental health, both our mental health issues, the podcast was kind of started as a thing to do to keep our hands busy.
Yeah, yeah.
And has morphed into, let's both watch the same thing and then we will learn things about ourselves and each other
yeah.
by the different reactions that we have.
100%.
Now, to watch the works of a director who is intentionally doing that.
Yeah.
Klaus Newcombe High, great film. Doom
Super
Asylum,
fun.
Great film.
Super fun.
I don't think those directors are trying to hold up a Rubik's Cube mirror
no,
and
nothing.
Say, take from this what you will and the answer will be informative as to who you are as a person. They're
no.
trying to make a fun B movie, right?
Bro, Doom Asylum, we're watching a film with the killer for about right. 20 minutes
right.
of that film because
right.
they needed to up the runtime.
Right.
So they just got a copyright-free right. movie and right. was like, let's watch this with him.
Alex Garland is clever enough that he is doing the first half
mm-hmm.
of the subtext
yeah.
and making it so rich
mm-hmm.
and so varied that it seems like this hugely interweaved, connected web.
Yeah, yeah.
And he very cleverly leaves the last 20% missing in
yeah.
all of those subtextual narratives to let you do the rest.
Do you know what he does? It's just clicked to me now. Because when you're saying this shit out loud, this is us in a day-to-day life.
Exactly.
The conversations we have and the discussions we yeah. have about various aspects, you take 40% mm-hmm. of it, I take 40% of it. We can mash those together and they both mean the same thing.
We're
like
both right.
They both hit us
yeah.
in a way. Like I can't help the way that a film hits me and you can't help the way
nope.
a film hits you. But the fact that Garland can look at a piece of material that he's then written and go, this is universally applicable to anyone and everyone. You don't have to be a fucking privately
nope.
educated posh boy to understand the Yeats
nope.
reference, but it helps.
Yeah.
But also,
it's there for you.
I really like fucking David Cronenberg.
Right.
So here's a mangina.
yeah, 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 yeah.
And David, the fuck's his name? Kinnear.
Rory Kinnear.
Here's Rory Kinnear crawling out of a fucking prosthetic.
Rory Canussie. Yeah.
In -2 degrees fucking British countryside.
Yeah.
Whilst it's freezing, covered in goop with his cock out. Enjoy. There's something 100%. There for literally anyone 100%. And everyone. Fucking gorgeous.
But for two blokes who like to sit down, watch the same film and use it as a tool of self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Garland deliberately building little tarot decks
mm-hmm.
of, here's an ancient mythological British thing that no one knows.
Yeah.
Here's some Christianity. Here's some W.B. Yeats. Here's some toxic masculinity. Here's some Me Too.
Yeah.
They all harmonize just like
yeah.
that scream and those strings.
Yep.
Go away and think about what that means to you. Is like catnip for this podcast.
Yeah,
it's no wonder why this is our favorite guy.
But then you've got Park Chan-wook, who's our other joint favorite director, and he does similar things but in ridiculous ways. He takes everything to such an extreme.
It's, for me, Park Chan is the extremity where he's making you complicit with characters who are doing things that are so alien to your.
That you can't. It's a car crash that you can't help but stare
it's
at.
That,
yeah. But it's also a car crash that's so well written and well shot that it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Oh, you want a love story? Yeah. San, how about a priest who hates his faith and then donates his body to a fucking blood drive and then also gets dark. He gets a disease. Also, now he's a vampire. Enjoy that. And then you're sitting in that for 2.5 hours, going, yeah. I don't know how this started. I don't know how we got here, but I fucking loved every second.
And the other thing that Garland is clever at is quite a lot of the stuff in this film wasn't 100% intentional.
That makes it better.
I was there going, the inside of the house is red. It's got red walls. So that's kind of sapphic.
Gotta be something.
That's got to be like a vagina, like the safety of the red walled home.
Ooh, I took it as it's going to be a place of either where she's in danger or where she is danger.
Yes.
See, this is the thing. Yeah.
But my thing is like, okay, so she's in the red safe space and the green man's trying to get in.
Oh, like a womb type
like
thing.
Like a womb.
That's really
and he's
smart.
He's trying to reach in and put his seed in the safe space.
Ooh.
And then like, okay, it's amber because flashback. None of that. You have a listen to Rob Hardy.
Yeah.
He's like, we knew it was going to be in the forest.
Right.
So we had to make green work.
Yeah, of course.
So that was going to just have to be a thing.
Yeah.
And red works great in horror. So we'll do red and green as the main one.
Nice.
And then the amber light in the flashbacks, he was like, wasn't intentionally meant as a mean of demonstrating that this was a flashback. It was because of where we were shooting. It's so gray and so industrial.
Yeah.
And so we wanted it bathed in this orange light to recontextualize it because everyone's seen London be gray and
fucking
horrid.
Hell. Right.
But Garland sees that. He doesn't not notice it. He just goes, that's more fuel for the fire. Let him have it. It doesn't interrupt my storytelling.
Fuck off.
Right.
Because okay, this is annoying. You sent me a list of like where I can get the free King James Bible from, right? None of them are red letter. Some of them are, but they take weeks to get here. So I've bought one. It's not here yet.
Yeah.
And this isn't for the podcast. This is just for my own sanity. I bought a red letter King James Bible because the flashbacks of James, who dies in the Christ-like pose with all the mirror images of the cross to the side and all this shit, when the flashbacks happen, the light's a bit red. And I'm like, that's red letter bullshit.
Yeah.
I need to read the red letters. I'm going to go through this and comb through it and see if I can cherry pick some more fucking goodness
from
it.
And you will be able to.
I've never once wanted to read the Bible. No, that's a lie. I started reading parts of the Bible when I was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
I asked my mom, why wasn't I christened? And my mom was like, to be honest, it's your choice. You do your thing, pick your religion, do your research. I'll support you any which way, which is the most glorious thing that anyone could ever do to birth an atheist.
Amazing.
I'd say atheist, agnostic.
Yeah, I guess.
So now I did a bit of reading. I was like, I'm not really vibing with it. Did a bit of the Buddhist thing. It's fine. I'm not really vibing with it. Did a bit of the fucking Hindu stuff. Yeah, it's fine. I'm not really vibing with it. And I've just kind of remained open since. Never since then have I gone, I want to read a Bible.
And he's tricked you into it.
He's just fucking, what, because the flashback meant nothing. It was just a bit orange. And now I'm like, I must buy a Bible. Fuck you, Garland.
But it's a good folk horror.
Right.
Is I don't understand what's happening, but clearly something is.
100%.
You're on the edge of understanding. You're the
hereditary.
Policeman walking around the island.
Yeah.
Going, something is up here. But I don't know quite
fucking
know what.
Fucking Wicker Man.
Right.
Sick.
Until you end up trapped in a fucking burning man.
Yeah, you're on a cliff and all of a sudden you find out the entire village is in on it and you were right the whole time.
And so good folk horror, a bit like J.J. Abrams' Mystery Box, is, are you going to end up in the burning man? What is going on? Can you understand this well enough to survive?
Yeah.
Or is the unknowable going to just eat you and you're never going to know? And so Garland just litters this film with a bunch of powerful imagery.
Love this shit.
Some of which even he doesn't know what it means, like the green man.
Yeah.
Some of which is just a symptom of the filmmaking process and the fact they had 6 weeks to shoot 6 hours a day.
Mint.
And just went, there you go.
Mint. You fucking smashed it.
And lets the audience do the work. And it's fucking genius.
I like that though. I love it when a film starts something for you and just encourages you to run with it.
100%.
I fucking love that. It's like a choose your own adventure with no ending.
It's exactly that. So what does this film really mean? Yes.
Yeah. I agree.
Watch it and find out.
You, whatever you think, is it's that.
Yeah.
It's that. And this has been brought to you by two white, straight enough men. The most qualified people to talk about the film.
Yeah.
The feminist film, men.
I feel like if there are lessons in this film, and we say this every time we cover a supposedly feminist or like anti-man film.
Sure.
If it says something that offends you,
right,
that's because you are the problem.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Like there is nothing in this film that 99% of men wouldn't watch and go, yeah, that's problematic as fuck.
Yeah. But also, it's going to, I mean, for me personally, it was quite an uncomfortable watch in places.
Yeah, of course.
Because I just get flashbacks to when I was younger, dumber, and fucking...
Yeah, of course.
An absolute cuntbag.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm still not a cuntbag. Do you know what I mean? I'm still there, but I'm working on it.
Exactly. We're working on it.
That's it.
I feel like if you're the sort of dude that gets offended by the Barbie movie...
Grow up.
Because you're a Ken.
Grow up. It's a literal out to being an incel. Just grow up. Get on it.
Just before we give everyone the all-time rating of this film, shall we see what the lovely people on the World Wide Web have been saying about us out there?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Because let me tell you, some people out there have been doing God's work and making the rest of these listeners look really, really bad.
Yeah, I've been seeing some. Jameson Craig.
Jameson Craig.
He's on a fucking roll at the minute.
Honestly, like, Jameson Craig, just everything we post,
comment first.
He does it rapid as well. I've got no... I'm really
within
impressed.
Minutes. And the worst thing is, right, is my phone buzzes more for Jameson Craig than it does for most other people. It's not a comment on you. I love that. It's more a comment on me.
Yeah.
But every time my phone buzzes around 6 p.m, I'm like, Jameson.
This is Jameson Craig.
Open my phone, I'm like, oh, there he is.
Do you think he's related to Daniel or...
I think he's the more successful big brother.
I think he's the alcoholic more. Irish brother.
I mean, that's specific.
Jameson.
Oh.
Jameson Craig.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it now. I thought that was a bit of a slight and I was like...
No.
Okay, that's fine. Well, now I like it again. I'm in.
Oncoming Storm on TikTok.
Yes.
Is another fantastic putting in work.
Incredible. Thank you for the support.
Roswald the First.
I mean, since day one. Amazing.
Since day one. I mean, he bullies you too much for a man who has never met you and has maybe given 2 days.
I'm
going to
fight him.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I'll fight him at some point.
Yeah.
But it'll be under the guise of like, I think, hey man, how's it going? Long time. I say, surprise! But much like my love life, I will probably arrive far sooner than he will, and the surprise will be null and void.
That's Comic Corner, gang, and we would hope it's obvious how you could get involved. Maybe hear us dig into your thoughts on the movies we're covering. Just find us on social media, whichever one you use.
It doesn't matter.
Get interacting. We reply to every comment.
We've tried to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of reels that have gone AWOL, and I'm just kind of like, I'm sick of you telling me that this is Dark City. I'm sick of it. Every time someone's like, oh, got that on DVD, I'm like, yeah!
Yeah, really? Wow.
Sick!
What a great
Where were you 9 weeks ago? Sick!
What are you rating Alex Garland's Men, Ben, and why?
This has got to be one of my favourite films of all time. Because it's impossible not to be. There's so much to it in so many different ways. It's marketed as one thing. Mm-hmm. It hits you entirely different every fucking watch.
Yeah.
The rewatchability is through the roof. I can't tell you a specific number of the amount of times I've seen this because it just keeps growing.
Yeah.
The amount of times that I'll be sort of cherry picking through it to be sort of like, but what does this mean?
Right.
What is this?
Right.
And then I'll fucking skim the rest to be sort of like, it's never touched on again.
No.
And then
no.
It's mint.
Yeah. 1,000%.
Bro, a fucking creepy priest vaguely fingers a bench. And
right.
It's disgusting.
He just wants to feel the warmth of our ass on the wood.
Is it? Or is it that the wood is slatted? And both outcomes make me feel gross.
Right.
I fucking hate it. Because I look at it and I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah.
Because it's weird. Does it mean something that it was his ring finger and he's a religious man? I don't know. Does Alex Garland? Apparently fucking not.
Apparently not, no.
Will I ever find out? No.
I mean, do we think it's thematically important that she gives her ex-husband an axe wound?
Yeah. I do.
Yeah.
I do. I think it's also great that her best mate is literally like, fuck are you going away anywhere? This is for you.
Yeah.
I'm driving down there. Yes, I'm preggers, but also, yes, we're going to take that fucking axe and chop some dicks off.
Yeah.
Let's get going.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yep.
Because if you were going through this, mate, I would be that person. I would show up. I wouldn't be pregnant, but I'd be tubby because I would have driven for 3 hours and that's two Burger Kings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So as soon as I arrived, quick shit, quick shower, then to chopping. Know what I mean?
But you take about 50, 55 minutes in a shower.
I love it.
I'd be long dead.
Nah, you'd be all right. You're just sitting in the garden playing with a leaf.
Also, if this was gender swapped,
yeah,
the second interdimensional forest spirit was like, do you want to fuck?
Oh, yeah, but you'd be standing there sort of on a log rather than in a tunnel. You'd be standing on a fallen tree sort of going, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
But the echoes wouldn't last that long because you would have come long ago.
That would be the noise of me coming.
The green woman is she's been summoned and is slowly arising. And then you're already gone.
You're half hour
down the road. She's like, oh.
Just off down the road with wet boxes. Right. Yeah.
Well, you've got this. You've got this sword. Don't worry about it. You seem like you're healing fine. Maybe that's the film that we write.
Women.
It's a short film.
It's a very short. about 45 seconds long.
Yeah, yeah. The lead character's name is Zeus. What's the question?
What are you rating?
Rating. Fat 10.
Yeah, fat 10. It's a fat 10. This nails the folk horror vibe. But it's like the Wicker Toxic Man.
It's the Wicker Toxic Man. But it's also... Like, I moan about modern horror a lot.
Yeah.
Because I always think it's either massively wishy-washy.
Yeah.
It's too convoluted, or it's just fucking jump scare central. I hate it.
Yeah.
Garland's looked at all and been sort of like, yeah, just hold my beer one sec. And then it's absolutely fucking ruined anyone else's chances of getting... Can you imagine James Wan doing something like this?
No.
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 Because he can't.
No, he...
Because no one can now.
No. No. James Wan's filmmaking is literally just a boring film, but occasionally someone tasers you in the leg. That's all. That's
a great way of putting it.
Is.
Yeah, it's either that or it's Malignant, where it sets it up to be one thing and then is something much, much more disappointing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right, that's all we got time for.
This is it, man.
We've got one last thing to push.
We do. So, I know there's an advert at the beginning of the episode. There's going to be one at the end too. So prepare yourself for that.
This
one.
Is the one at the end.
No.
Okay.
There'll be another one.
Right. Okay.
We'll record two.
Okay.
Because we have to now, because I've just said it.
Oh.
The Rural Remix Film Festival is happening next weekend from the time that this is released. Obviously, if you're listening to this 6 years in the future, fuck you. You're far too late. You're
we are talking about the weekend of
the 11th of July, 2025, right the way through to the 13th of July, 2025. Shropshire Independent Cinema is a group of four cinemas.
Yep.
It's the Wellington Orbit. Telford's only independent cinema. It's a fucking glorious place.
It is.
Single screen, 63-seat, gorgeous cinema. You've got in Shrewsbury, the only independent cinema in Shrewsbury. You've got the Old Market Hall. Gorgeous little single screen
Lovely.
Cinema. Incredible building. Go and watch it. There is the Ludlow Assembly Rooms,
mm-hmm.
and there is Wem Town Hall. All four of us are putting on this festival. We have a huge selection of different films. At the Wellington Orbit, which is the one that I'm working on and the one that we're hosting. We're going to be there all weekend. It's going to be fucking awesome. We're recording an episode live. It's going to be great. We're playing Pride and Prejudice.
Yes.
We're playing Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yes.
And then we're playing 28 Years Later.
Yes.
We're starting prim and proper. We're delving a bit zombie-ish, but still a bit prim and proper. And then we're going full fucking zombie and a little bit Jimmy Savile.
That'll probably be the first time I get to watch 28 Years Later.
I can't wait. Dude, I can't wait. Because then on the Sunday... When we're watching it for the second time,
yes,
we're going to be watching it with James Bond's stuntman.
Nice. Justin Pearson.
Justin Pearson's going to be there. We're going to watch some of his stunts on the screen. We're going to do a Q&A with him. He's going to sign some books. He's written an autobiography. It's fucking incredible. He's doing it at discounted prices. It's insane. There's a VHS treasure hunt. There's a fucking live episode happening. And then after all of this, on the Saturday, there's a secret fourth movie.
Woo!
And the secret fourth movie... Is something
quite it's close
something.
To our hearts.
And it's going to be something.
Yeah, if you listen to the show, I would recommend you try and get to this because it might change the trajectory of the show forever. We don't know.
It's going
to
be great. It's going to be super fun. It's going to be stupid. It's going to be loads of fun throughout the days. Come down. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, this all sounds great, but it's going to cost me 50 quid. Fuck you. Is it going to cost you 50 quid? It's 24 quid for the entire day.
Mint.
Come down for the whole Saturday, 24 quid. All Sunday, 24 quid. Get a fucking ticket. Come down. Say hello. And if you're not coming to the Wellington Orbit, Ludlow Assembly Rooms, Wem Town Hall, Old Market Hall in Shrewsbury, go fucking do it. Support Shropshire Independent Cinema. I'm massively passionate about this. Love you.
Love you all dearly. That's it, sadly.
The end of the show. Go tell all your mates to fucking get in here.
Get me in here. Now, Ben is going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and every single idea present in Alex Garland's Men into a concise, motivational Monday pep talk to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know you all listen on a Monday. So Ben's going to get you through your week with what he's about to say that name checks and covers every single point that Garland makes in this film. And I'm just going to tell you to consume.
Listen, if there's one lesson that we can all take away from this film more than anything, is that if you're threatened with a divorce, just say you're going to kill yourself. Because it works out great. Not for you. It's terrible for you. But for the partner that you're being an absolute cunt to, they do just fine. They do great. And if anything, it'll help them wander through the woods and get weird with a naked stalker.
Is that what we're saying?
I don't know.
No.
Because apparently everything is right and everything is wrong.
Everything is right.
There you go.
Everything is right.
Enjoy. Enjoy. Oh. Go and watch the fucking film. See you at the film fest. Now for advert number two.
Sign up to this, but Ben fucking forced my hand. I got us in.
Got us in it.
So if you don't know, we're going to be at the Rural Remix Film Festival. We're going to be at the Wellington Orbit Cinema. We're going to be showing you three films officially, and then we're sticking around a little bit later to do a secret screening of our own.
This is just on the Saturday.
That's just on the Saturday, though, so, you know, you won't have to stay up too late.
But on Sunday, we've got Justin Pearson, who was James Bond's stuntman, coming in. We're going to watch some of his stuff on the screen. We're going to ask money, some questions. We're going to get some answers. We're going to put some questions to you.
Yeah.
You're going to get some answers. And he wrote a book. It's a tenner, and he'll sign it and shit. Do you know what I mean?
Look, you guys have seen how professional we are on camera and in recording with editing. Now come
professional. Oh, I'm fully clothed right. I'm full dressed.
Right.
Full man clothes.
Maybe come see how much of a shit show it is when we can't edit. I'm just saying that it's going to be...
Yeah.
It's going to be memorable either way.
An issue.
You might see a man soil himself.
There's a strong chance I'll be fully clothed.
Yes.
A strong chance. It's air conditioned though, so
you're not gonna be looking cool. Yeah. Very hard to impress an alien naked, you know? Oh, I love you, bye!